Welcome into the KSO show, Mason Voth, Drew Galloway. Do we look happy to be here on this Thursday? No. We were going to talk football today, and then giant wrinkle in our plans. Something happened with K-State basketball that drove us to have to talk about basketball today. We wanted this to be a fun show. We wanted to talk about football. And instead, Drew, we are talking about something that the optics of it are worse than the actual situation itself. But K-State has lost one of only two commitments in their 2025 high school recruiting class because yesterday Ashton McGee announced that he would be reopening his recruitment. If you aren't aware of who Ashton McGee is or haven't dove into that one too much, he committed to K-State a little over a month ago. He was the first high school commitment of the class for K-State. Or maybe he ended up actually – did Wilson jump in front of him with the –
I think he was first.
Okay, I know that he was the one that was trending to be first, and then Wilson and him were right around that same timeline. So I guess I would have to go and look back at that to see. Yeah, Wilson came a day after him. So March 5th is when Ashton McGee committed, and then Xavier Wilson commits the day after that. McGee was a guy that we talked about at the time that it was, here's his best case scenario, but it's going to take a lot to get there. And this is somebody that you probably didn't pencil into seeing on the floor anytime soon. Xavier Wilson, same type of deal. You know, you're probably not expecting him, nor should you, to come out and give you quite a bit at the start of his career, but he is higher thought of in the realm of talking about high school recruits this year. He's number 297 nationally. He's got three stars from On3 and 24/7. And he is a guy that, you know, as a point guard, you could see the path there, a Kansas City native and all that. Ashton McGee's recruitment seemingly came on out of just necessity and desperation by K-State. They didn't have any high school commitments. They had kind of reached out to McGee late winter, you know, sometime January, February, I think was the timeline there, and kind of slow played it. And then they're like, okay, we need a high school commitment. And that's why it seems like McGee was brought on at the time. Like, it's a little easier to do this now because, you know, the song and dance that you have to play in this game that we're in is that, yeah, people are probably, we've seen the criticism on our football commit videos before is that, oh, every guy that comes in is, you know, the best player ever, blah, blah, blah. Well, we can't really just come on and just trash dudes. That's not going to work out for us for a number of reasons. And when you're looking at stuff like this, the purpose of recruiting is to bring in guys that are going to be good and actually play for you. At least that should be the goal. So here is the path that it would take. It was hard to see that path for Ashton McGee when they got him. That was a tough one to be excited about for people. Most people, when they see the new commit tag pop up on the KSO message board, they want to be excited. And I don't know that Ashton McGee excited you. But anyway, he was going to be a part of the class. So he and Xavier Wilson were going to be on next year's team. And then yesterday, in the midst of all the other chaos that K-State basketball has been dealing with, Ashton McGee announces that, hey, my recruitment's 100% open again. You know, thank K-State for all this. So he will not be a part of K-State's recruiting class this upcoming cycle and now leaves K-State with seven open roster spots. We know that they are in all likelihood only going to use five of those seven scholarships available to them just because that's how K-State's going to do it. You really don't need 15 scholarship players if you build a roster correctly. You don't need to use all those scholarship spots, and that was the problem that K-State was getting themselves into. They were not building this roster correctly, and yesterday happened out of the necessity of, oh, we need more room for serious needs on our team, and Ashton McGee did not fit any of those, and it was the easiest one to cut bait with. I think it's probably good for both parties. I think it was, you know, somewhat probably mutual where it was made clear to Ashton McGee, you're definitely not playing next year. You're probably redshirting, and here's the path that you're going to have to be on. It's not a fun proposition to be somebody that you know, all these recruits, for the most part, their entire life, they've been one of the best basketball players on their team and their area, all this. All they know is playing, you know, 95% of the available minutes. And now you're telling a guy, hey, you're probably going to play 0% of the minutes over the next two seasons, probably. And so McGee, K-State, they split ways. The loss of this player means nothing to K-State. Nobody should be beat up about them losing Ashton McGee. And this is not somebody to melt down over. And I don't think many people are actually doing that about the player. The situation itself, though, has a lot of things that are warranting of maybe not a full meltdown, but at least a tongue lashing, because it's not a great look for K-State to have this happen the day before signing day, because the late signing period opened today, correct, Drew?
Yes.
And then on top of that, you have all these other defectors from your team. You've preached continuity, all this other stuff that's important. And yes, while this individual recruit, the talent may not be a serious hit to you, it's just another really, really, really bad look that when everything else is going poorly for you, you have just another little cherry on top of that crap Sunday that you've got going.
Yeah, it in a vacuum again, and I hate that we've had to say that a lot this offseason, in a vacuum, like, losing Ashton McGee is not the biggest thing in the world. He was probably going to redshirt. He would have taken another probably year to see the court in a meaningful way, at least. But he was really athletic. Like we said, like, high-end was Xavier Sneed, but, like, low-end was, like, never going to see the floor. So he was kind of like a lottery ticket-esque kind of guy. The problem that I have with it is kind of the problem that everybody has had with it, is the optics are bad, and then it just kind of goes back around to there's never, like, a consistent plan, and there's always constant what feels like waffling and changing up philosophies and changing up what they want to do. Optics are terrible because the late signing period opens again today. And having this kind of like what feels like a mutual splitting of ways just feels kind of gross because you feel bad for the kid. The optics are also terrible because if you look at McGee's timeline of his recruitment, K-State offered him in late January. He goes through February. He visits in March, and then commits later on in March. Or I think I might have been like that last weekend of February because it was the Colorado basketball game. Then commits in March. And then you don't even get 6 weeks of having him committed, and now you're parting ways with him. So that is just rough for me because it's like if you wanted him in January, February, and March, why would you not now? And like, I get that you need the roster spots, but if he was just going to redshirt anyway, I think that you could have maybe swung having 14 guys and felt okay. But then the plan part of the equation is, like, again, all we have heard is wanting to replicate what Houston does and having a lot of continuity and doing all this kind of stuff. But now you don't have any real roster continuity because you've lost like 90% of your scoring and a lot of your minutes from last season. You're only bringing in one high schooler when you only brought in one high schooler the year before. Part of what Houston does well is they bring in guys that do redshirt and end up being contributors. Like, I believe that Francis was a guy that was a redshirt at Houston when he started. So you don't have any of that. You don't have any continuity either. You've brought in two high schoolers the last 2 years. They brought in five high schoolers since they've been at K-State. Or I guess six with Dorian Finister. They've brought in six high schoolers. Four have already left. So there just seems to not really be a plan that is consistent. And I know that in this era, it's hard to have consistent plans, but just the messaging and how the plans have came about just feel really weird. And the timing is never great. Like we talked about how, I think it was on yesterday's show that we talked about how this season probably wasn't the season to be preaching continuity. And it was probably last off season when he could have brought Cam Carter and Arthur Kaluma back. Yeah. Now this season, K-State is way worse than they were 2 years ago. And then you want to bring all these guys back and then you don't bring them back and you haven't really hit a home run or even like, I think that you've hit probably a double in the transfer portal, but probably need more guys that are home runs. And you have still have all these spots left and everybody's just kind of looking around and it's like, what is going on here? Like what are expectations? Because you keep looking at the roster and what everybody else is doing in the Big 12. And we talked after we were done recording, Baylor has brought zero players back from this past season because of graduation or the portal. Baylor's roster right now is a lot better than K-State's, and they're building from scratch. UCF isn't bringing anybody back from this season either. K-State's probably in a better spot than UCF, but it's close because UCF has also had some pretty good pickups. So you just kind of look around as like, what is even the ceiling of this team? Because right now, you have a lot of guys that, are, if they're in the rotation, it could be pretty rough.
So on the topic of a team like Baylor, who's going through this hard reset right now, where they've got, you know, guys are doing all their things or whatever, and they've lost players and they've done all this. Going through, and just to paint the picture of the situation for Baylor, they have lost everybody, but they are bringing in the 15th ranked player in the country next year, a wing named Tunde Yesufu. So 15th best player in the country. Some services have him as a five-star, but you know they're doing good there. The transfers, they've already landed this cycle, six of them. The 29th ranked player in the portal and Michael Ratage from Oregon State, the 40th ranked player and Obi Agbim from Wyoming, 166th player and J.J. White from Omaha, 184th player and Dan Skillings from Cincinnati. It might seem high for Skillings, but I guess Scott Drew might get it figured out. And then Juslin Bodo, who is was just inside the top 200, just got booted from it from High Point, who is a center. He is going to Baylor. And then they also added an unranked portal player, a junior forward from Rice. And, you know, Baylor just grabs random forwards and they seem to work out well. So that's what they've replenished their team with so far. Conversely, you look at K-State, they are bringing in Xavier Wilson, who's the 298th player in the class of 2025. The three transfers that K-State has, because Tyreek Smith technically counts in this transfer class since he didn't play last year, he is the 234th ranked player in the portal. But then K-State went out and added a player that is basically going to play the same position as him, and Kamari McGriff, who's the 405th ranked player in the portal. And then Abdi Bashir, who still doesn't have a portal ranking. I would envision him being ranked higher than those guys, but it's still clear Baylor has a better plan in place right now to improve. And, you know, you talk about the optics of this and everything that gets said but not done. Like, this comes across as another panic move for K-State. The entire Ashton McGee story with K-State is going to be about panic. They panicked that they didn't have a high school recruit, so they were going to take Ashton McGee. Then they shouldn't have, because you had Xavier Wilson, who I think is a more legitimate prospect than McGee. And then you get down halfway through the portal process. The portal closes in 5 days. you panic again and say, we don't have enough roster spots for the needs we actually have, because we still need a lead guard. If you're Jerome Tang, you're sitting there, you need the guy that is going to run your offense next year. You need players that are actually going to put the ball in the hole and make you a threatening team. So you had a panic and move away from Ashton McGee. And it just adds into this big pool of, over the last really year and a half, we have seen, we have seen from K-State a lot of conflicting actions that go against the messages that have been preached by this staff. I think a lot of people would have not pegged Jerome Tang as a guy that would have this type of situation play out for his team, where you work to get a high school kid to commit to you, and then the day before signing day, you say, actually, we can't have you take this spot. Here's why I don't think you should come here. And then the kid's like, well, yeah, I probably shouldn't go there. Like, I think that's how this situation played out. I don't think Ashton McGee on his own was just like, oh, yeah, I'm committed to a Big 12 school. I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I want to go find something else. Like, maybe he did. Good for him for deciding that. But I think this was a more mutual type decision. Now,
and by the way, they're still down a coach.
Yeah. Well, yes, you're down an assistant coach. Yurik Maligi is at Texas now. Well, you're also down another staff member, because the other big part of this is Franklin Muschelli, who is the director of video and analytics for K-State. He was the one that played the heavy hand in Ashton McGee, and he's not with the program anymore. He's at UL Monroe as an assistant coach. But you add into this that we have seen the philosophy of roster retention. You know, we got to do what Houston's doing. We got to keep guys in-house. That has not happened, because you lost a bunch of seniors last year who were key contributors to you. Max Jones, Coleman Hawkins, David Gasson, they can't come back. They were probably your three best players last season. Well, then the two guys that you would pencil in with them as well, Brendan Hausen, not coming back. Doug McDaniel, not coming back. And like, it was going to be tricky, but Doug was the selling point why this thing could get better, is, oh, you're bringing your lead guard back for the first time ever. So you have five guys transferring out. You're returning players from last year's team. Tyreek Smith, he transferred in midseason. He wasn't even allowed to play. Still needs a waiver to play this coming season. CJ Jones, who was, okay sometimes, not very helpful other times. You can't count on him. But CJ Jones is right now your second best player on this team, second or third best player. Certainly from an offensive production standpoint, or what could be done, he might be your second best player. Taj Manning, not going to play. Moby Ikeguruka, anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes a game is the type of player he's going to be. And, if you go to KSO, that's been in some flux this week. Maybe he's a guy that's still not around. Who knows? David Castillo, very underwhelming freshman year for the way that not just Jerome Tang talked about him, but what the ranking said about David Castillo, and then what his teammates said about him. And then Xavier Wilson, a true freshman point guard, who we know that just doesn't work out in the Big 12 all that much. You're not bringing much back from last year's team, so they've abandoned the roster continuity thing. There's a lot of, trying to hold guys accountable in this thing. And then Doug McDaniel gets to play and start against Cincinnati for really no good reason other than the fact that, he's kind of gone off the rails. The only way that we can, kind of sell our souls to get him to do something is just give him what he wants, even though he hasn't earned it. And the same type of thing happened during the season. When Coleman Hawkins is hurt, they go to Buddy Rich, who had not played since the loss to Oklahoma State, but they were so desperate that they went to Buddy Rich to try and do it. And I get why they would be in a conflicting position, because you have a bunch of guys sitting around right there that you would say to yourself, well, I owe it to these guys to give ourselves a chance to win. So, like, I got to do something. But there are so many things that I just don't think that you can be so wishy-washy on. And that's where this program has gotten into a serious point of struggle the last year and a half, 2 years, is that a lot of the philosophies, the second something doesn't work out, they're out the window and they're trying something different. And it would almost be better if there was a stubbornness to try and follow through with the plans that were in place, as opposed to at every drop of the hat having to change what you're doing. And that seems to be what's going on right here. And that's why the Ashton McGee thing is, it's not a big deal in itself, but it's just another little line on the K-State basketball jersey of bad mistakes. You know, you got the Cleveland Browns jersey that lists all the starters since like 2000 on it. And it's just like, oh my gosh. Well, K-State basketball has got their own jersey going right now, and you keep putting another nameplate on there, it seems like, every couple of days during the portal season. And it's getting longer and longer, and it's really tough to get out from something like that.
And I think that some of what the fan disconnect and kind of where all this 180 from the fan base started has really been because of the consistent messaging and then kind of going against it a little bit and then trying something new. Because, I mean, it was probably a couple weeks prior, but almost a year ago. I mean, we were very excited that Jerome Tang was coming back. We were excited about what this potential portal cycle last year could have been. We were excited about what the roster that they had that they brought in. The opening night, I think that we both said that K-State was going to be like fourth or fifth in the Big 12. But now it's crazy how fast things can change, because it is very hard to really squint to see a path where K-State is even in the top half of the league right now. Because, like I said on yesterday's show, the league just keeps getting better. You look at some of the early top 25s, early top 40s, you see seven Big 12 teams, the top 30 on some of them. And it's just hard to see a path where K-State ends up in that 8th, 9th, 10th position right now. And that just sucks, because this is a proud basketball program that has had its struggles recently. I mean, this is, again, another coming off another team that didn't make the tournament. But the last three coaches have made the Elite Eight, which is something that not a lot of schools can say. And to have that, and to have that really kind of be the message right now, is like, how do they even get in the top half? Just kind of sucks, because we thought that this was going to be a really fun offseason, and it was a big offseason because I think that a lot of changes needed to be done and to happen. But it seems like the changes that are happening and are going on aren't necessarily like what I would want. Like, you probably lost probably your best staffer and your Rick Malagi, but Jerome Tang is a defensive guy, so I don't think that you'll have too much of a dip there. You've lost your director of analytics. Rodney Perry has this academy going on in Arkansas. Nobody really knows if he's going to be like really involved or if he just like started it. But if he's like involved in any way, that kind of feels like a recruiting violation, that he would be a guy that is no longer with K-State staff because he just wouldn't be able to. So you don't really know there. It's also April 17th. From what we have understood about the Malagi situation, it kind of sounded like he was going to leave anyway and had that determined well before the offseason began, and you're still down an assistant coach. Like, there's just a lot of things going on right now that are really hard to explain.
Yeah. No, it's tough for fans to get an idea that everything's going to be okay. And that's kind of been the tough part of all this over the last year, is that it doesn't feel like there have been many reassuring moments for fans. Like, think about after they lost to Baylor in the Big 12 tournament, and, you know, there was the not wanting to answer a question about the offense and like this other stuff. And it, yeah, in that moment, like, is it really important, like, that singular game? Like, no, but that really isn't the point there. Like, fans want to be able to hear some idea that things are going to get better, and here's why they're going to get better. But instead, it was just like not talking about that. Like too many times, it has seemed like a response to a significant question has been, I'm not gonna answer that or answer it in the way that's wanted. And like people want to see a plan. They want to feel like, okay, because that's what we talked about. We said, if you saw a plan, it wasn't just you give in blindly and say, okay, I'm back in. You got me. I think you're going to be good. Like, I'm excited for this. You would be pessimistic about it, but you could at least, if good things were happening, people should be able to say, hey, that's a nice move. This is going to help. This is going to make you better. Like, I can start to see it, and it makes me feel a little bit better. My eyes are a little bit more open. I'm gonna watch it next year and see how it starts. As opposed to right now, you got people that are just going to be totally out on K-State basketball at this point. Like things still have not gotten better. You don't see the path to it. And you know, there's obviously this effort to go the European route, and there's somewhat of a Euro plan that I think that is in place. But people have been hearing about this for a while now, and you still haven't been able to actually make it final and get the announcement. And within that, I mean, if you go over to KSO and do some digging and reading through the recruiting threads, you would be able to go and see that it seems like there's already some pivoting going on the European front that K-State has had, where it's just kind of like, man, like, can we just stick with something and roll with that and see how it plays out? Because not coming to any decisions and then constantly having to retool and not getting any final decisions, it continues this, you know, spinning your wheels and not doing much. And that's not a fun place for anybody to be in right now. And it's not a good look, because you know, the last 2 years have been failures with far better off seasons than what's taking place right now.
No, that is exactly right. And I hate to bring them up again, but like Baylor lost everybody. But if you look at what they have done, all of those guys make sense for what Baylor likes to do. Like, I even hate to say this, but like even Dan Skillings makes a lot of sense for like what Scott Drew likes to do. And even Bodo.
Because you know that I'm a Dan Skillings hater.
Yes. But even like Bodo ranked pretty low. But he fits exactly what Baylor wants to do and running the no middle. Like, he's a guy that has a lot of length that can go block shots. Like, there just seems to not really be much of a plan from K-State. And it really kind of all centers around the changing of philosophy between season one and season two to how they really switched things up. And now from there, you're kind of seeing that they've switched things up a lot and they might have been better suited to just continue with what they did year one and keep going and do that from year two on.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see how it works out, but this is the player itself in Ashton McGee, meaningless in the grand scheme of things for K-State basketball. If he was here, fine, great. If he's not here, fine, great, whatever. It's just, again, it's another one of those bullet points that you go, that's on the con side of the pros cons list of what's going on with K-State basketball right now. And there aren't many pros. Like, can you think of a pro for K-State basketball right now, Drew, that you would throw out there, give people some positivity?
I think, If you liked Abdi Bashir when he committed to K-State, you're gonna really like him right now because he's in line for a lot of usage.
Yeah, his role going from a crappy CAA team to a team in the Big 12 at this point in time probably hasn't changed a whole lot, and that's not a good thing. But you know, we'll see how it plays out. Still, plenty of time. For K-State, I would tell people like this, if you go and look at how things worked out last season for K-State in the transfer portal, at this time last year, K-State only had, they only had two commitments, I believe, Doug McDaniel and CJ Jones. Now, shortly after, April 26th is when Brendan Hazen committed by fall, committed on the 27th. And then Max Jones was May 9th. And Yagana and Yenso was June 4th. And Coleman Hawkins was June 14th when that took place. So they made a lot of ads, but you're probably saying to me right now, you're like, well, they kind of sucked last year. So why should I feel good about what they did last year? I mean, we can look around, throw out another team, Drew, and let's just on the fly compare to when they made their moves last season. Somebody that would be in a comparable spot last season that we can throw out there. I would use like Kentucky in some extent, but like I don't think Kentucky and Arkansas actually fit this.
No,
because they're on a different footing.
Trying to think of like somebody that had like a big roster blow up that wasn't a coach decision. What about like Indiana?
Well, here I'm gonna go do some. I'm gonna go look at Missouri last year because Missouri had to, you know, make a big change. They were terrible. The year before. Here is what Missouri did last season. They had Jacob Cruz committed on March 19th. They had, then it would have been Tony Perkins committed on April 15th. Marcus Warwick was April 17th. Mark Mitchell was April 19th. And then Josh Gray was May 19th. So by May, they had locked in all their transfers. And by this time last year, they had most of their portal class locked in, and you know most of those are guys that contributed to them in a serious way this past year. So
yeah, I imagine that they had multiple high school guys
too. They had five in their high school class last year, Drew. Yeah. The number 32 overall player, the number 74 overall player, the number 86 overall player, the number 96 overall player, and the number 142 overall player. So they had five top 150 recruits last season, in addition to their five portal guys to make up 10 new players on their team.
Now I will say five is probably a little bit overkill.
It is, but if you get five guys in the top 150 and four of them are four stars inside the top 100, and then you add what you did and you're an NCAA tournament team this year, that's actually like props to Dennis Gates there, because if you get that many high-end players or whatever, and you're able to make the tournament, like you're in theory setting yourself up for a decent trajectory. You're not just building for this year, but years beyond that. So that's, and again, the timelines on all this stuff in college basketball is changing because of the portal windows and everything. So it's not apples to apples. I will give you that, but you can look around and see that there are a lot of teams that they want to have stuff kind of getting close to wrapping up, or at least a clear plan. Like we talked about Baylor at the start of this, the meat and potatoes of their roster has been put together already. They might try to do one or two other things and make some big moves. They obviously have to. They only have seven players set to be on their roster next year. So we know that they need to, you know, add about five to six more. But they've got a really good foundation.
They probably have all their starters already.
Yes, probably so. So, yeah, that's not like the most exciting thing to think about right now, I would say. I don't know anybody else that you wanted to compare to. I guess we could kind of go around and look at that. I mean, Texas Tech last year, if you want to compare to that, they had their two high school commitments. One was Christian Anderson, who was a top 150 guy, and then Leon Horner. They were committed, obviously, for a while. But their portal additions, they had Federico on April 17th. Kevin Overton had committed the day before on April 16th. And then Elijah Hawkins was April 30th. And then they didn't add JT Toppin until later. That was just a couple days before June started. But, you know, you already had guys that you looked at, Overton, Federico, Hawkins, that you said, okay, I'm assuming you're going to play significant minutes for us. As we look at what K-State has right now, like without knowing what's coming in, those guys I mentioned from Texas Tech, you could have known what their role was going to be no matter what you added. Right now, Abdi Bashir is the only guy on the roster that I don't think his role is going to change very much based on what you bring in. The rest of the guys, it kind of matters. Like, it's going to fluctuate. And for most of them, their minutes need to be driving down based on what you add here coming up. But yeah, here we are. We just talked 35 minutes about basketball again on Thursday. I know we didn't want to do it, but we did it. We'll talk football tomorrow, hopefully. Okay, we got to talk football tomorrow because we're going to record it ahead of time since we've got baby preparation stuff going on and everything else to, you know, get excited for the weekend. Okay, let's finish this out with Drew's Ireland fun fact, because we want everybody to be informed not just about K-State and Iowa State playing Farmageddon in the 2025 Aer Lingus College Football Classic. You can get over there. You can experience it. You can see the game, see great parts of the country by going to cats2ireland.com. That's cats2ireland.com to get hooked up with everything you need to go and experience a very exciting football game in a different country than what most Cat fans have probably ever seen a sporting event. So, Drew, what do you got for us today?
Our fun fact today, we're back on animals. So the most common animals in Ireland are the red fox, the European hedgehog, the otter, and a badger. You can also if you want some aquatic animals that you can see, you can see bottlenose dolphins and orca whales in Ireland.
Okay, well that's a fascinating grouping of wildlife that we're probably not used to in most of our areas. So I'm looking forward to that. That's a good update.
I don't think that I've ever seen an orca in my life. And
not in captivity.
Yeah, not in captivity.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen him in captivity before, way up close. Shout out Shamu. We don't talk about Shamu anymore, right? Since he's kind of a murderer.
Yeah.
But maybe not his fault. I don't know where we all stand on that or what we would.
They are literally called killer whales. So I don't think that it's his fault.
That's true. That's just a nature thing, man. You know what? Let me. So, people, again, if you don't care, get off this. Whatever. We're going to entertain you for a little bit. More than a couple now. My family. I'm trying to think when this would have been. Like, probably 2009, 2010, spring break. We had never been to seen the ocean, a beach, anything like that. And so my mom loves being outside, and she's like, well, let's go and experience something like that. And so, and then we had some other things we want to do. So we were going to go through Texas and go to all the way down to what I don't even know where we ended up down there, whatever the area is. And then, but on the way we stopped in Dallas and we watched the Mavericks play. And then we went and we were in San Antonio, only time I'd ever been to San Antonio, and we went to SeaWorld and we got to experience good old Shamu and all of that. But as we were walking up to go watch that show, a lady caught us from SeaWorld and was like, they would bring a kid up there on the little platform very close to the water and do something with them. And they picked me to do it. And so there are pictures somewhere of me right up close to where they would have the killer whales, which, you know, doesn't seem like a great idea, but it was happening. And that was my experience with Shamu. I do recall they asked me at one point what I wanted to be when I grew up, and in San Antonio, this is peak. Mavs and Spurs are both really good teams. And I said that I wanted to play for the Dallas Mavericks. And I got booed. I was 11, 12 years old. And they booed me for saying I wanted to play for the Dallas Mavericks. So
nice.
I think it actually I may have only been 10. But it was the Jason Kidd had just recently been traded to the Mavs. So whenever, I think that was either 08 or 09. When Kidd got sent back to the Mavs from the Nets. But
booing a kid is pretty savage.
All right, it was 2008. So, yeah, 2008, I would have been 10. Well, no, I wouldn't have even been 10 yet. I would have been 9 years old. I would have turned 10 about a month later because it was spring break. So, yeah, they booed me for saying I want to play for the Mavs, and I was up close to Shamu. And he did not kill me. I'm a survivor, baby. Any fun animal happenings for you? I'm trying to find this. There's got to be a picture somewhere. You know, my mom takes all these freaking pictures and I can't find them, but yeah.
No, I don't have any like crazy animal stories like that. That is insane that you were up close and personal, Shamu.
Yeah, I don't think they do that anymore.
I'm gonna say probably not, because
it doesn't seem like that's that puts them in a tough spot, I would imagine, to, you know, liability and everything that goes into it.
No, 100%.
But it was a cool experience, but kind of weird as I look back on it and see how that, you know, whole thing worked out. And it's not like I'm overly interested in whales or anything, but you're down there and it's like SeaWorld's a thing you got to go do. But then you see everything afterwards and it's like, oh, they treat these animals maybe not the best. They probably don't enjoy being enclosed and they're attacking the trainers that are supposed to be taking care of them. So, yeah, there you go. Let's do this, Drew. We promised people football. We'll talk football later on. Tomorrow is my goal. And do you have any thoughts from Matt Wells yesterday? We won't do a full show on it, but you can give some Matt Wells thoughts right now as we close out.
I mean, I would say that I think the biggest thoughts and takeaways that I have from Matt Wells is just that he just seems like a guy that's on a mission and they have a lot of playmakers and he's excited. And again, any talk about Avery is always nice. And it just keeps sounding like Avery's just ready to roll.
Yeah. It does sound like good news on that front. So yes, it's at least good. I'm trying to buy time here so I can see if I can find this dang picture of me and the whale or close to it or whatever. They also gave me this weird, like, I don't know if you call it like a necklace thing, but it was like a wooden whale tail. Oh. And it said, I think like the whole point of the show, it's supposed to be inspiring to people. So I think the whale thing said believe that they gave me it. It sat in like a closet somewhere for the longest time. I have no idea where it is now. Feels like one of those weird things that my mom probably kept that, you know, it's just like, why would we do this? But, that's still such a bizarre experience to me. I wonder if anybody else online shares that experience, where they go up there and, because I mean, man, they're just lucky that nothing bad happened. Nobody cares here. I just wanted to see if I can find this picture of me to prove that it's real. That I'm not making up, or it's not like my imagination that I was chilling on stage with this whale. But
that'd be a crazy dream to have.
Yeah. And it's definitely real. It's just, I guess I'm having to scroll through my mom's Facebook page. And back in the day, I don't know if you couldn't create albums or if she just ignored it for a long time. That would have made it a lot easier if she's just like spring break 2008. Here are some pictures. Doesn't seem like that's the thing. So I'm having to just go through like the pictures she's posted. A lot of great ones at random K-State sporting events over the years, though. So not anything good, like by game basketball games. But, you know, that's the both way, the cheap route. So, some pictures from a Royals game in 2009 with Joaquin Soria getting ready to pitch. I don't think he ever actually pitched in the game. He warmed up, and instead of going to Soria, they went, I don't even remember who it was. Luke Hochaver started that day. It was against the Rays. It was the day that Stuart Sink beat Tom Watson in the British Open. And I remember everybody at the Royals game was mad about it or whatever. I'm not going to find this picture of Shamu, but there was some drunk guy leaning over the bullpen the entire time. And he just kept shouting, not him, not him, Soria. And, you know, at the time, everybody laughs at it. And now I sit here and I think that's me every night watching Matt Quatrero try to manage the Royals bullpen. Not him, not him, Sig. We're going to end the show right there. I'm still not over how the Royals lost a couple of those games in the Bronx the last couple of days. Sorry to anybody that listened to the last 10, 15 minutes of this. That's a you problem. I told you you could get out. I'm never making you just say, you know, listen to this. We'll talk football tomorrow, and we'll be shorter in how we talk football. A little quick hitter for you. We're out of here.